The Blue Jackets witnessed one of the scariest incidents in recent sports history. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley. This is After the Score.
Welcome back to After the Score from WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown here with Thomas Bradley. This week we'll talk spring football. The Buckeyes are back. Is Raekwon McMillan everything he's cracked up to be? And how is Braxton Miller's shoulder?
Well, hold on, Steve. There's still basketball to be played. And Steve and I will break down the Big Ten tournament and why we don't think OSU makes its sixth straight final.
But first, the hockey world had its eyes on Dallas this week. Dallas Stars center Rich Peverly, who has a known heart condition, collapsed on the bench during a game against the Blue Jackets. Columbus Dispatch beat reporter Aaron Portsline says no one knew what was going on, including the players.
The players on the Blue Jackets bench actually thought that a fan had jumped onto the bench and was doing something to Stars players. They didn't want to say what they, you know, it was pure conjecture, but they were worried that something was, some sort of a fan incident was occurring. And you could just see, boy, the looks on the faces of the players. I mean, these guys are hockey players, not actors. It was pure. It was fear. It was panic. It was shock. Their faces were absolutely blank.
The Stars and the Blue Jackets and the league came together and decided to postpone the game. How did that decision come about, and is there precedent for that?
The league takes into account where the teams come in on this, what do the players want to do. And I spoke to the league yesterday, Deputy Commissioner Bill Bailey, who said there's no real hard, fast policy. There's no if this happens, then this. I mean, and it looks inconsistent, frankly. The horrible incident many moons ago when Clint Malarchuk was cut, his carotid artery was cut, and he bled a lot on the ice. They finished that game. They mopped up and finished that game, incredibly. When Richard Zednik was cut a couple years ago with the Florida Panthers by a teammate, skate blade inadvertently, of course, there was an enormous amount of blood from his neck area. They mopped it up and finished the game. And speaking to Nathan Horton of the Blue Jackets, who was then the teammate, he said it was an empty experience, that nobody was really playing the game. There's a lot of going through the motions there. The only two times in the history of the sport that they have postponed because of injury was this, Rich Peverly with the Stars, and 7 years ago when Yuri Fisher of the Detroit Red Wings collapsed on the bench and needed to be resuscitated as well. The league takes it on a case-by-case basis. The Stars made it clear that they didn't want to play the rest of the game. The Blue Jackets didn't want to play either. We both agreed on that, so the league pulled the plug.
Did the Blue Jackets not want to play, or do you think they went along? I don't want to sound insensitive, but they were winning the game. Was there any hesitation by them to postpone the game?
I can't say that I know their absolute honest feelings, what the discussions were behind the scenes, but I can tell you from talking to players and management in the last 12 hours or so, I've not seen even a hint that anybody wanted to continue to play.
From what you've seen and what's been reported, how did the Stars handle the situation, and are the Blue Jackets prepared for a situation like this?
Yes, it seems over the top almost. That you have a moment like the incident in Dallas. The league, once Yuri Fisher had this incident in Detroit, the league took steps. They brought the best of the best trainers together, and they developed a protocol to handle situations just like this. There's a defibrillator behind both bench areas in the NHL. Most teams, the Columbus Blue Jackets, have four defibrillators within probably 100 feet of the benches. I don't think it's a reach to suggest that the changes made by the league in the wake of the Yuri Fisher incident may very well have saved Rich Peverly's life Monday.
How and when do they make up the game? I understand they might not even have to.
Well, I think the chances are great that they're going to have to, because both the Stars and the Blue Jackets are in the thick of a playoff race.
And to be clear, they only have to make up the game if it will affect the playoff race.
Yeah, I don't know where the league stands on that, because this is not something that they have dealt with. If you look at their schedules, the challenge, of course, you have to find a date that's currently open. The two dates that I've come up with that are open for both teams that do not require the teams to play three games in a row, which the league won't permit, and currently shows no conflict with the building in Dallas, are March 31st and April 9th. Failing either of those two dates, they might have to go beyond the regular season and make it up on, say, Monday, which I believe is April 14th.
You talked about both of these teams being deep in the playoff run, and the Jackets are in the playoff mix right now due to a big win against Nashville a couple nights ago, a big win against Detroit last night. Got a game tomorrow night against San Jose. What does the stretch toward the playoff look like for the Blue Jackets?
Well, it's starting to take shape, and I mean, this picture changes so frequently when teams are this jam-packed. But it's looking pretty good. I mean, when you consider how this team is playing right now and who they're playing without, I mean, they've got two of their top defensemen, Federer Tootin and Ryan Murray, out of the lineup. It's rather impressive that they've hung in here. But, I mean, the benefit here that the Blue Jackets have this year, which they did not have last year, is the tiebreaker, which they lost the tiebreaker in almost every scenario last year. Where they're at right now, they win the tiebreaker in almost every scenario.
So you would predict the Blue Jackets at this point, you would predict they make the playoffs?
I would, yes. And this sounds like a foreign concept, I think, to many in Columbus, Ohio, but it is certainly looking that way. They're playing a very physical, consistent brand of hockey, and frankly, I don't think some of the teams in the East are as tough. It's not nearly as deep as the West is.
We've been talking Blue Jackets hockey with Aaron Portsline from the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, thanks as always.
Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Spring is in the air. March rain falls gently on the Olentangy. It's almost time to plant that garden. That means it's football time. Wait, what?
Yeah, it's spring football time. The Buckeyes have started practice and are getting ready for the April 12th spring game. And rumors are flying, personnel changes are happening, and we're joined by Ben Axelrod from Buckeye Sports Bulletin to talk about this spring football team.
Ben, thanks as always for coming in. Every time I turn on the TV or turn on the radio, it's Raekwon McMillan this, Raekwon McMillan that. Who is this guy? Is he superhuman? Can he shoot lasers out of his eyes?
He's a big time prospect. He's one of the top five linebackers in the country, and he landed in Ohio State and he enrolled early. Middle linebacker is a spot right now that's been occupied by Curtis Grant for the past two seasons.
Another big time recruit who's kind of fallen short of expectations.
He was even ranked higher than McMillan, and he's kind of struggled his two seasons. He actually got benched as a sophomore in favor of Storm Klein, so that kind of tells you about the the play of Curtis Grant that season. He was solid last year but dealt with some injuries, but McMillan's a guy who's going to push him for that job, and I think a lot of people are expecting McMillan to maybe upseat Grant, but I think anybody who's been paying attention to this program the past few years would see that true freshmen don't typically come in and play right away, maybe as much as Urban Meyer hypes them up to. So I don't know if it's a realistic expectation to think that Raekwon McMillan's going to start, at least at the start of the season, but he's definitely going to be on the field for the Buckeyes.
Luke Fickell said he had a chance, though, to start. He said that was a realistic possibility if he earns it.
Yeah, and I think that's more of a motivational tool for Curtis Grant and for McMillan, too. I don't think you want him going in there thinking he doesn't have a shot at all, especially when you are going to count on him to play. And, hey, maybe down the line he will start like, you know, Ryan Shazier did as a freshman. But I think opening day in Baltimore there, I think you're going to see Curtis Grant lining up at middle linebacker for the Buckeyes.
Another incoming prospect, Darren Lee, the son of local news anchor Candace Lee. Tell us about Darren Lee.
Yeah, he's a guy who, he had to come in and earn his offer. He wasn't a Raekwon McMillan. He was a guy who Ohio State said, hey, we want to see you at camp and we want to see you earn that offer. And really the kind of famous story is he outplayed Von Bell at one of the Ohio State camps and earned that offer and pretty much accepted right on the spot. So he played a little bit last year and he wound up, Ohio State thinks he redshirted, based on medical reasons, but right now that redshirt hasn't been cleared yet. So technically he is a true sophomore as of right now, but he could be a redshirt freshman when all is said and done. But he's a guy we saw lining up in Ryan Shazier's vacant spot at linebacker this past week at the first spring practice of the season. And he's a guy the coaching staff has kind of raved about and, you know, could be a guy who's one of those surprise contributors this year.
Star running back and workhorse for the Ohio State team last year, Carlos Hyde, has entered the draft, and he most likely will get drafted pretty high. The mentality of college sports, who's next at running back?
Ezekiel Elliott is the guy who the Ohio State coaching staff is kind of attaching its wagon to right now. He's a guy who was a big-time recruit last year, and he saw some playing time, but not really significant playing time. But when he did get in there, I think you saw flashes, definitely. And he's more speedy. He's not a power back like Carlos Hyde was, but he is a guy who's gonna, you know, he has some power to him. He's 218 pounds, and he's not just a straight, you know, around the edge guy. He can go up the middle. And then the other guys to keep an eye on are obviously Briante Dunn and Warren Ball. They've been with the program now. They're in their third year, and it's kind of now or never for those two. And Rod Smith is a fifth-year senior, and it really is now or never. If he doesn't get it done, his Ohio State career is over.
I feel like Rod Smith is 40 years old at this point.
I think the coaching staff probably feels that way, too.
Another guy who was in the running back mix last year, now a wide receiver, Dontre Wilson. How does he transfer to wide receiver? How does he make that transition, and how good do you think he can be out there?
You know, I don't know if he's going to strictly be a wide receiver. I think that he'll line up in the slot, and sometimes he'll motion into the backfield, and he'll...
Kind of like Philly Brown last year.
Exactly. I think that's kind of the role that they were hoping Dontre would be able to play immediately last year, and maybe he didn't have the size to do it. He's put on some weight. He's closer to 190 pounds than he was the 160 pounds he came in at. Watching the spring practice, the one thing that stood out to me the most was they made a real concerted effort to get the ball into Dontre Wilson's hands, whether it be swing passes or quick little quick hitters. Dontre Wilson's going to be a major factor in the offense this year, and whether it's coming from the wide receiver or running back position really remains to be seen.
I hope so. He is fun to watch.
We've got almost 4 minutes now talking about Ohio State football and haven't mentioned senior quarterback Braxton Miller. He is out for the spring after having some shoulder surgery. So what does that mean for the other quarterbacks and the rest of the team moving forward this spring?
Well, you look at the position battles this year, you know, obviously there's offensive line, there's running back, like you mentioned, there's linebacker, but really, who's going to fill in for Kenny Guyton? Who's going to be the backup quarterback? And, you know, we've seen Braxton Miller now. He has not been healthy dating back to his high school career, not for a single season. So, you know, chances are, and he's out with shoulder surgery right now, chances are Ohio State is going to need another quarterback to play some significant snaps next season. And really neither Cardale Jones or JT Barrett have those significant snaps. And those are the two who are really kind of jockeying for the number two quarterback spot. And right now Cardale Jones doesn't have a very firm hold on it, but he is penciled in as the number two just based on seniority more than anything. And he's a redshirt sophomore, but age-wise, he is as old as Braxton Miller. But JT Barrett's a four-star prospect who they've really, really raved about, you know, the past two seasons. And I wouldn't be surprised to see JT Barrett step into that number two spot this fall.
I hope it's Cardale Jones just for the fact that he's 7 foot tall.
Yeah.
He seems so huge out there.
Yeah, and he seems about 300 pounds, too. He's a big boy.
Going into the season, also a lot of coaching changes, particularly on the defensive side of the ball. Walk us through the coaching changes and what you think they mean for on-the-field performance.
Yeah, on the defensive side of the ball, you've got the two coaching changes. You've got Chris Ash coming in and taking over the primary defensive coordinator position, even if Ohio State won't admit it. They're basically switching over to Chris Ash's scheme, and he's going to be in charge of the entire secondary, too, not just the safeties, even though that is his official title as co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach. He's going to be responsible for the entire back end of the Ohio State defense, and he's going to be implementing a quarter system, which is going to emphasize press coverage and really getting up in receivers' faces, which I know is something that fans in Columbus have been clamoring for forever, it seems like. And then the other switch is obviously Larry Johnson Sr. coming in for Mike Vrabel, who left for a job with the Houston Texans. And Larry Johnson Senior has a plethora of experience at Penn State. You know, he developed 7 first-round picks on the defensive line for the Nittany Lions, and he's a guy who really seems to fit into the mentality of an Urban Meyer program.
We've been talking about Buckeye spring football with Ben Axelrod, who writes for Buckeye Sports Bulletin. Ben, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
if there's one thing you can say about the Big Ten basketball season, it's that you can't really say anything certain at all. It's the most unpredictable I think I've ever seen it. Michigan won the regular season title. Ohio State was undefeated for a long time, then lost 4 out of 5. Wisconsin looked like world beaters, then they were awful. Now they might not stink again, but Michigan State might stink again. You got all that, Thomas?
Yeah, well, it's no, I don't have any. Ohio State lost twice to Penn State, you know, naturally. Yeah. Nebraska has a first-round bye in the Big Ten tournament, which we all predicted.
After beating Ohio State once?
After beating Ohio State, they beat Wisconsin in the regular season finale. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we all predicted Nebraska to be, you know, a Big Ten powerhouse.
Right, and I don't think anyone predicted Michigan to win the league title after losing Trey Burke. It's been a really weird season. Thomas and I are going to break down the Big Ten tournament, what we see, what we think might happen. The first game on Thursday, Indiana versus Illinois. I think Indiana is still decent with Sheehy and Vonley. Illinois, I think, is terrible. I got Indiana.
I have Indiana as well. Indiana is ranked 8th in the Big Ten. I'd honestly put them top 5. I think they're a better team than Nebraska. Nebraska won some clutch games, but Indiana hasn't impressed this year. I think they will take care of business against Illinois in that game.
Yeah, they have senior leadership. They should be fine. OSU-Purdue. OSU, clearly. Purdue stinks as well.
They are the worst team in the Big Ten, which is weird. It'd be interesting to see if Matt Painter keeps his job after this year. I do not think so, but Ohio State will roll.
And then we've got...
And just because I said that, they'll probably lose, but right, Ohio State will win.
Great going, Thomas. Thanks. Minnesota versus OSU's nemesis, the great Penn State. I'm going Penn State here with the upset. I see DJ Newbill. I think he gets hot. Penn State wins. And Penn State's always been pretty good in the Big Ten tournament. They've always overachieved.
Conversely, Minnesota's also been pretty good in the Big Ten tournament. Back in 2009, Minnesota overachieved and played Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. I go Minnesota here. I think they've got some depth. They got some big guys down low. I go Minnesota.
Probably the least interesting first-round game, Iowa-Northwestern. I have Iowa, but I really don't care.
I have Iowa as well. Iowa overachieved in the beginning of the year and fell back down to earth. They got all the way up to number 8 in the AP poll. But
things start to get pretty good after that. Indiana-Michigan. I have Michigan with Glenn Robinson III and McGarry. They can run a lot of bodies at Indiana. I think Michigan takes that.
Michigan's
clearly
got the Big Ten Player of the Year in Nick Stauskas. This game's Michigan.
And OSU-Nebraska. I think it's kind of a coin flip. I really hate to think that Nebraska basketball is even with Ohio State basketball at this point. I don't think they can handle losing to Nebraska twice in the same season and Penn State twice in the same season. I think OSU advances.
Neutral floor, a lot closer to Ohio than Nebraska. I think Ohio's going to travel well, or Ohio State's going to travel well for this game. I have Ohio State basketball over Nebraska ball.
And then the next game, you have Minnesota versus Wisconsin. I have Penn State versus Wisconsin. Hopefully it doesn't matter going forward here. I have Wisconsin.
I think we both have Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin doesn't lose that game. And then Michigan State, Iowa. I don't know how Michigan State lost to OSU the other day. I think Michigan State's clearly better than OSU. I guess I do, since rebounds were basically even, and I don't know, Michigan State's not rebounding like they normally do. I still think they can beat Iowa.
I think Michigan State beats Iowa. Ohio State is kind of Michigan State's kryptonite. Ohio State plays up to Michigan State. Michigan State plays down to Ohio State. So I have Michigan State rolling there.
And so we're going into the third round. OSU-Michigan.
I have Michigan.
I have Michigan, too. I think Michigan wins. I think they're better. OSU doesn't have an answer for Glenn Robinson III or McGarry or any other bodies they can run.
Ohio State doesn't have a shooter. Ohio State struggles to put up points, and that's what Michigan does well.
And then we have Wisconsin-Michigan State. That's probably the best game of the tournament, I think. Both also have something to prove after losing their final game of the regular season. I think all things equal, you go with Tom Izzo. I have Michigan State here.
Tom Izzo in March is a safe bet. I have Michigan State as well.
And then in the championship game.
Battle of Michigan.
Yeah. I go Michigan. I have Michigan State.
I have Tom Izzo in March. I think Michigan State kind of had a letdown the last couple games. They lost to Ohio State, lost a couple times before that. They remind me of a team that has potential to be a number one seed, but they're going to get like a 3 or 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. I think they win the Big Ten. I think they make a deep run in March, but we'll talk about more of that next week.
And that will do it for this week's episode of After the Score. You can always find the show on iTunes.
Join us next week after Selection Sunday for the start of the WOSU NCAA Bracket Challenge. You can find more details on that at wosu.org/afterthescore.
And I will, of course, win that challenge. Don't even bother, Thomas. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Thomas Bradley.